The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody wants everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today we are joined by a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame. He has 17 PGA Tour wins, including back-to-back U.S. Open titles in 1988 and 89, which wasn't done again until Brooks Koepka. He is currently a TV color commentator, and with the Masters right around the corner, who better to chat with than my friend Curtis Strange? But before we get started with Curtis, I want to let you know about Geico. Okay, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. But here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding to-do you do today. With the Masters right around the corner, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, he'll trash me later in text messages. Curtis Strange is my favorite golf announcer, and he knows that I probably watch more golf on television on weekends than any normal person should. But I love golf, and I've loved it since I started playing when I was 9 years old. You know him from his work on ABC and ESPN. He does big tournaments now for Fox Sports, working for our pal Mark Loomis. Until Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills, Curtis Strange was the last man to win back-to-back U.S. Opens in 1988-89. Player of the Year, 1988. Hall of Fame, 2007. And again, with the Masters around the corner, I had to bug him and get him on. Hey, Curtis.
Mike, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. And I want to start, before we get to the Masters, because there's so many rich subjects there, I want to know what your reaction was. I don't even know if you were watching the Sergio Kuchar thing last weekend. When, either when you watched it or when you found out what happened. And what happened was Sergio banged a putt before Kuchar got a chance to give it to him. And it caused a great kerfuffle there. And he lost the hole and ended up losing a close match. What should have happened there, Curtis?
Well, what should have happened is exactly what happened, is that, you know, Sergio got a little impatient and, you know, it's the circumstance. Cooch had made a 20-footer for bogey, okay? So he walks off the back of the green. Sergio's got a two-putt from 6 or 7 or 8 feet for par. He's going to win. So Kuchar's not even close to the action. Sergio puts it up there in a tap-in and backhands a tap-in and makes five.
Yep.
And so... you know exactly what happens in match play. There's certain rules you have to obey in match play, and one is that you don't touch your ball until your opponent says it's good.
Right.
And what happened is exactly what happened. In our world of golf and in our etiquette and the way we play, and we all get along pretty doggone well, match play is a different animal. And it's me versus you. There's a winner and loser every day, and it's not as cordial as sometimes you might think it's going to be. I've often said if we played more match play, we wouldn't get along so well in the locker room. It's a different animal. I mean, look right at the tennis players. So anyway, the press made a big thing about it. Kuchar got put on the spot because of what happened. Sergio just made a mistake and it cost him a hole. And of course, then it grew from there. But it's unfortunate. But when you have match play situations, that's going to happen.
We're talking to my pal Curtis Strange of the Mike Lupica Podcast. Now, in your match play history, and everybody immediately referenced, including Zinger, especially on the weekend, that another Spaniard, the late great Severiano Ballesteros, was a whole handful at match play. And I was wondering, did you and he ever tangle?
Oh, yes. Sevy was a really, really interesting character, and he was a great competitor, and he thrived on a bit of gamesmanship. And what made me so mad, I played Seve seven times in the Ryder Cup. And I...
Oh, my goodness. Did you play him seven times?
Well, in matches and singles, yeah.
Right.
And so anyway, what always aggravated me, you know something was going to happen because it's the nature of the Ryder Cup. And you knew Seve was going to try something on you when you got on the first tee. What upset me so much is that I let him get to me because I knew it was coming. Just blow him off and forget about it. But he annoyed me, and that's exactly what he wanted to do. So he accomplished what he set out to, and I didn't. So I laugh at him now, and God bless him, and you know he's gone from us, but too early. But I just that's the way match play is, and there's a certain amount of gamesmanship once in a while. There's no fault to that. That's part of the fun. Who can handle it and who can't? But in stroke play, you don't get into that because you really are playing the golf course and trying to score best you can for 4 days. So different animal.
Now, was it as ever contentious with you and Seve as it was with Zinger and Seve?
It got close, yeah. It was just, it meant so much. I mean, it wasn't personal. It was just match play. Each match meant so much because the matches were so close and always have been. And it just, you did everything in the world to win. And when you weren't, you know, it was disappointing. So anyway, you kind of gave him the look and he gave you the look and, you know, and move on. But it's looking back on it, that was great fun. That was part of the competition.
Who was our toughest nails-est match? Was it Raymond? I mean, who was
Raymond Floyd? You didn't try that stuff on Raymond. Lanny Watkins.
Yeah.
Tom Watson. Larry Nelson. You didn't get to them. You know, they'd beat your brains out. So.
I was lucky enough to play a round of golf one time at Atlantic with Raymond Floyd, and that the poor bastard courtesy drew me as a partner. So I felt like I was Spain and he was he was the United States.
No, Raymond was great. He was a tough competitor, and he had a great game to back it up. And you know, I don't care how tough you think you are. I thought I was a tough guy, but at times I didn't have the game to back it up. So it's. It's kind of like pissing in the wind, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you got to have it to back it up. I mean, MJ could back up his talk, and Larry Bird could back up his trash talk. But if you can't back it up, it becomes useless after a while.
By the way, when you referenced something a couple of minutes ago, you get uncomfortable seeing how friendly everybody is on the golf course these days, right?
No, I don't. You know, we were always friendly. When I sent out a text a couple of years ago when I saw John Rahm and Andrew Landry in the first hole of a playoff chatting going off the first playoff hole.
I remember. Yeah, I remember.
And
I remember.
It was a reference that struck me, so I'm trying to tweet out inside baseball stuff. That's all I'm doing. I'm not trying to be critical. But if something strikes me as very unusual, then I think somebody might want to hear it. So it's inside baseball. And I just tweeted out, I can't believe they're talking going off the first playoff hole. It would be the last thing I'm trying to do is make my playing competitor comfortable. I'm trying to do everything in my power in a nice way to make him uncomfortable. And being uncomfortable, you know, makes an uncomfortable situation even worse. So by talking to him, it's going to relax him, I think. Because what am I going to talk to him about, number one? And number two, I don't want to upset him by talking to him. I don't care at this point in time how his wife and kids are doing, you know. So what in the world am I going to ask him about? Where he's going to eat dinner tonight? I don't care. I want to beat you. So that's a match play situation right there, a playoff. So there you have it.
We're talking to him. You wonder why he's my favorite golf commentator. This is why. Okay.
I don't even know your wife's name, so I don't care.
we're talking to Curtis Strange on the Mike Lubega podcast. Okay. There's a laundry list of people that we need to go through, and then I'm going to let talk about your Virginia Cavaliers coming up in the Final Four. Tiger, there was a school of thought last weekend that the best thing that could have happened to Tiger was missing that four-footer on 18 because it couldn't possibly have helped him in those conditions to play 36 more holes on Sunday.
You know, those who speak that and write that go to show me how ignorant they can be.
But okay. you know what I'm saying, Curtis. There was an immediate rush to say, oh, this is the best thing that could have happened to him.
That's such a crock. It's unbelievable. You know what? He's out there to play well every day and in every tournament. And what could be better than him to win last week in the match play and then go to the Masters with a week off,
right,
and full of confidence? So not that match play destroys your confidence, because he might have played very, very well that match and lost. So match play, again, it's a different animal. But I just think it's not a smart statement, no.
Curtis, let's go through his game right now and what you're seeing, because I know, listen, everybody has good putting weeks and bad putting weeks. You know, maybe yeah. Jordan Spieth thought he was going to putt good forever. Well, okay, he found out that you don't. But what I can, and we've actually texted about this, and his putting is problematical only because I keep telling people, having played golf as long as I have and not anywhere near competitively, you don't get a lot better at putting after the age of 43. And I'm wondering what you're seeing from that aspect of his game.
No, you don't get better, but he was so damn good. Getting a little worse is not pretty. Is not bad to start with.
Yeah, right.
So, and, you know, it's he still putts plenty good, plenty well enough to win tournaments, yes. You know, we saw that last year. Can he make... What he was so good at, and this is a little inside baseball, what I marveled at was at his ability to make the tough putt, much like Nicklaus, when it counted so much Sunday afternoon.
Right.
We all make putts early in the week. We all make putts on Saturday. But can you make it when you're on the biggest stage and the biggest shot of the week? And he did it most every time. And when that happens, you know, when that stops happening, then you have to win some other way. And historically, players have become better drivers of the ball as they get older. They learn their swing a little bit better. They don't hit it as hard. They become a little bit straighter. Great example of that is Tom Watson. So Tiger has not.
Right.
So where is he going to get that shot that he might not make that last putt on 15 or 16 to win? I don't know. But he's still so doggone good at times. You never say never with Tiger. I think Augusta National, you know, there's a few players that just get so fired up and so excited. And sometimes when you're 43 years old, or 48 in Mickelson's case, or, you know, later on in years, you've been doing this for over 20 years, you need a spark. Or you need an exciting venue like Augusta National. Get your heart pumping a little bit. Get your blood flowing. And that certainly, I think, is true for Mickelson, and I think is becoming true for Tiger.
Talking to the great Curtis Strange on the Mike Lubega podcast, you know, I watch his ball striking, and every once in a while he'll goof me up because his distance control with short iron still can get a little sketchy sometimes. But just his ball striking with his irons has been superb lately. But man, oh man, Curtis, he will mix in a crooked drive at the worst possible moment. We saw it at the end of the PGA. I was watching that with my son at that day, and I think it was on 17. And I had the wrong direction. I said four on the right, and Zach said why? I said because he's due for a bad drive, and he hit that pull hook and cost himself his last best chance to win the golf
tournament. There's the old optimistic Mike Lupica that I love so much.
No, it's just somebody who loves this game, and I get feeling, you know, and I often, you're lucky enough that even when you're on the air, I share them with you, okay? But I just felt one coming. I felt a crooked drive coming, Curtis.
Well, that's been his M.O. Not necessarily when he was playing so well back in the turn of the century, but you know, he's been such a good player, and we've expected so much out of him every time he's played, and he delivered most every time. Right. Now as he gets older, things aren't quite, You're not 22 anymore. But there's certain parts of the game you can be as good at or even better. And, you know, I think that I love the way he's swinging now. He doesn't look like he's swinging by the numbers or so mechanical. He looks like he's playing the game and swinging the game. So, you know, when he misses, he tends to miss to the right because he's scared of missing left. And that's true with most good players, right-handed good players. The left shot is what's always scared us.
Right.
And when you can eliminate one side of the golf course, and for most of us, it's the left side of the golf course. If you can eliminate the left side of the golf course, you know, you only have one way miss, and his has been to the right. At times it's been left, and that's what scares him, but most of the time it's to the right under pressure. And I just it baffles me sometimes because his swing looks so good, but he gets so fast, and he gets so anxious, and his speed is still way up there in the numbers, that he'll miss once in a while. But, you know, he's human. There's a lot of moving parts. But sometimes I felt like I got better at when I was playing. When you're there late Sunday afternoon, you're obviously playing very well. I felt like at times I got better because my senses were right on. My tempo was right on, and I was thinking so positively that at times that's when you see people do something that ordinarily they wouldn't be able to do. And Tiger's done that many times, but at other times he gets so quick and fast that he misses. But, you know, we go back to the Masters. You know, I think he's certainly one of the – I don't know if he's the favorite by any stretch, but he's certainly one of the four or five or six top favorites, and wouldn't surprise me at all to see him. In fact, I expect him to be somewhere in the mix on the weekend, or especially Sunday afternoon.
One of my favorite golf lines I ever heard, Dan Jenkins told me, that Tommy Bolt's line, "You can't talk to a hook." It's just one of my...
The hook doesn't listen.
It doesn't. And Ed Steen told me another time he had a big hook, and he was playing with Bolt, and Bolt put his hand on his shoulder. He said, "Son, those hooks sure do go, don't they?"
Yeah. You know, a friend of mine, Bob Golby, used to say it's a sit-down, lay-down, wrap-around son of a gun. And it wasn't a son of a gun, he said. So, you know, I got to tell you a quick story. When I was my second or third year on playing the Masters, I practiced for a week before the Masters thinking, you always heard that a draw is better at the Masters. A draw is better on the second, the fifth, the 10th,
right,
the 13th. So I tried to practice a draw off the tee. Thursday morning, second hole, hit a pull hook in those trees on the left. Forgot about that whole swing thought for the last week. So, you know, we do crazy stuff. I don't care who you think you are. We do the craziest stuff. And the Masters is just play your game. Play your game and hopefully you make a few putts.
Talking to Curtis Strange, we're talking about the Masters coming up next week. Let's go to Rory McIlroy, because Curtis, if you love golf, watching him finish the Players was one of the most exciting things I saw this year. When he came off 16, I think he said to his caddy, "I'm three good swings away from winning this thing." He puts it on the 17th. He hits two superb, a fearless drive on 18. And as good as Dustin is, as good as Koepka has been, I still think his best is better than anybody else's best right now on the tour.
You know, it's certainly trending the right way. And to win on a quirky golf course like the Players speaks volumes. Still, what you just said, he's the best player on the planet.
No, winning at his best. Yeah, at his best.
At his best. Now, I still don't think he's at his best. I still think he can do what he did, you know, 3 years ago or so. But, you know, Dustin Johnson is very good at his best. Justin Rose is the number one player in the world. I think he is still right now. And then you got Koepka and you got Justin Thomas, who I'm trying to think of.
Right. Yeah.
You know, those four or five guys, when they're at their best, is exciting golf. How do you differentiate one from the other? I think you do because Rory has got the resume and the three majors. And I think if nothing else can help him, I think it's beyond the point of being too much pressure. I think it's going to help him that he's going to be on point to win the Grand Slam.
Right.
And if there's ever, you know, he's been through the three or four years of not winning it to complete the Slam. And I think he's ready to do it. He's 29 years old. He's at just about golf maturity. He's accomplished everything in this world other than winning the Masters, and I think it's going to be tough for him to beat. He's just got to make a few putts. He didn't have to make a lot of putts.
Not three putt.
Yeah, that's true, and that's tough to do around there. But a lot of that is dictated how you drive the golf ball. And if you drive it well, you come in out of the middle of the fairway with short irons, and that'll dictate that you'll be closer to the hole and won't three putt. If you start driving it a little bit crooked, you can play from around Augusta, hitting it a little bit crooked, but you're coming out from bad angles, a little bit of the rough to tough. Hard, fast greens, and now your tendency is a three putt because you're going to be 30 or 40 feet from the hole. So it all goes back to the tee shot just about every week.
Curtis Strange is our guest on the Mike Lubica podcast. Much more with Mr. Strange right after this from our friends at Kronos. Okay, it's day one for a new employee, but instead of joining in productively, they face a confusing, disjointed process, piles of paper forms. With Kronos, you can automate the entire onboarding process, creating a better experience for employees and freeing you to focus on the human part of your job. HR, payroll, talent, timekeeping in one unified system, all with proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at Kronos.com/onboarding. Kronos, workforce innovation that actually works. Talking to Curtis Strange on the Mike Lubica podcast, talking about the Masters. We were just talking about Rory McIlroy. I don't know if you were watching, Curtis, I don't know if you're watching the Tiger versus Rory match the other day. Rory hit maybe the worst iron shot I've ever seen him hit in competition to really cost himself that match.
You know, it's again, we were talking about Tiger and bad shots. They're human. I'm certainly going to be the last guy to say, what in the world are they thinking about? Because we all fluffed up. The worst shot I've ever seen Rory hit was the tee shot on Sunday afternoon at the Masters 2 years ago when he was either tied for the lead or leading. It went to the right of the scoreboard almost. But Rory has a tendency. Again, I think when you hit the ball that far and you swing that hard, you're going to short circuit once in a while.
Right.
And you're not going to be a Calvin Pete or a Larry Nelson or, you know, a straight driver all the time because you're swinging so hard and you're going all out. So it's going to happen. You can get away with it at the Masters a little bit more than some other championships, but can you recover even if at the Masters?
Curtis, when you just referenced a shot, I was just talking about that drive the other day with a friend of mine. Curtis, he hit a drive to a place that I didn't even know was a place at Augusta National.
When they showed
that little house, I'm thinking, where the hell is that house? I've never even seen that spot.
Well, it was way to the right and unbelievable. It's not out of bounds. But, you know, he recovered with par, so it was all good. The next hole, he missed a short one for birdie, and that's when the game was on.
Yeah, right.
When he missed a short one, that destroys your psyche a little bit. And it doesn't mean he's going to lose, but it certainly doesn't bode well for the rest of the round. And I was rooting hard for him. It's hard not to root hard for Rory McIlroy. He's such a good guy. You know, I texted Mike Tirico at the Players after he interviewed Rory. It was either Friday or Saturday after the round, and I said, what a good guy. He says, you know what? He's such a good guy. You can't help but root hard for him. And it's the truth. He's honest to a fault, which most of these guys are, which is wonderful to hear and see. But it's also hard to root against guys like Justin Rose, a complete gentleman, and Brooks Koepka, just a stand-up guy, you know, a man's man, and Dustin Johnson, just a nice man. And all of them, Ricky Fowler, all of them. You know, the golf's in a good spot right now. And we talk about these top players looking up forward to the Masters. But, you know, they're all likable guys. And, you know, I hate to say this, but it's even after last year, Patrick Reed, who's a wonderful player, struggling a little bit, but a wonderful player, they kind of got on him because he's kind of like a lovable villain. Well, right. Lovable villains is what we need to root for and against. But he's a good guy. You know, he's just a hard competitor, and there's nothing wrong with that. I love guys like that. I'd rather see a hardened competitor who doesn't smile all the time than some guy that gives up, you know, hangs his head, says, woe with me. I don't like those guys because they're wasting their talent.
You know, by the way, you were talking about Koepka. You were so cool with Koepka after he won at Shinnecock Hills, because the club you welcomed him into, that's a small club, Curtis, the back-to-backers.
Well, I was thrilled to be there, and some people didn't believe that, but honest to God, I was. It was emotional for me. You know, every time I think about and get me talking about that, I get a little emotional about winning the U.S. Open. It was my dream as a kid. It was Koepka's dream as he got a little older and got into golf. But, you know, he played so well, and I'm sitting in there, and I'm lucky enough to be walking the golf course with him for Fox. And, you know, here I am the last guy, and here he is going to be the next guy 30-some years after the fact. So he deserved it. He's a good man. And when I asked him, "Do you know what this means?" and he said, "No," that was a perfect response, Mike.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what it meant at the time either. And I wasn't quick enough to say, "Well, you will in later years." As he gets older, and this is not done for another 30 years, he will understand to win in back-to-back opens is a big deal to you. And it's not so much a big deal, but what we did, but it makes it special because of what those great players before me didn't do. Nicklaus and Watson and Trevino and whoever it is didn't win back-to-back. That's astonishing to me. So it must be tougher than I think it is.
And Curtis, you know, all I was thinking about that day, and Curtis knows, I was lucky enough with our dear friend Jack Whitaker. I played Shinnecock Hills a lot in my life. Okay,
yep.
So Curtis knows how much I love the golf course, and we both know how hard the golf course is. Curtis, the year before, it wasn't even like to me. It wasn't even a U.S. Open course. He won it. Good for him. God bless him. He made a million birdies.
Yep.
Okay, but that was open golf on Sunday, and oh my God. Those up and downs he made, those putts he made, he, you know what? I felt like I was watching the world's strongest man competition.
Well, you damn near were in our little world. Koepka's not the longest hitter. He's certainly long, 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 but he's not the longest hitter, but he's probably the strongest hitter. And he, unbelievable bogey putt on the 11th hole to save bogey. And then he saved, I think it was 13 or 14, he saved an unbelievable par. That won the tournament for him. And then he birdied 16 to take a 2 or 3 shot lead. And, you know, that's when it was pretty much over. But he's just a stand-up guy, classy guy. He's not out there to show. He talks a little bit of, well, I don't get enough respect. Well, you know, he gets plenty of respect.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to, when he gets a lot of respect, he's going to wish he was kind of behind the scenes a little bit, like he was before. Because of guys like Lupica, you know, out there badgering him.
Oh,
but
stop it.
He's just fine. And let me tell you, don't think he can't win at Augusta either.
Curtis, we're talking to Curtis Strange on the Mike Lupica podcast. It is now, whatever it is, 50 or 51 weeks since Jordan Spieth's drive on the 18th hole at Augusta on Sunday clipped that tree. The whole world thought he was going to catch Pat Reed and win the Masters. Curtis, what the heck has happened to him since?
You know, he's gotten married. Everything's good. He might not be making as many putts or hitting as many good shots, but it's all good. It's, you know, I look at it, there, I don't care who you are, you're going to have ups and downs in this game. We're not talking about a 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 year career. We're talking about a 30 year career. And so you're going to have peaks and valleys. And right now might not be the best he's ever played, but life is probably pretty good. Of course, life is dictated by how you play as well, or was with me. But I certainly expect him to start playing a little bit better. And, you know, I look at it as he's doing okay. He's doing just fine. And he'll get his mess together. And, it can turn around so quickly for a golfer. You know, 1 minute you're the worst player in your own mind in the world, and then you make a 30-footer and make an unbelievable birdie somewhere, and all of a sudden, you know, I got a little giddy up in my step. I'm not bad. That kind of thing. So it can change overnight. And once again, going to Augusta might be just what the doctor ordered. You'll never know until he gets there. But
right.
If you're struggling on the greens and you're struggling, that's never a good sign going into a big, big, tough challenge like Augusta National.
Curtis, and I could a lot of names could be in the question that I'm going to ask you. Okay. And listen, you won 17 times on the tour and you probably could have won 17 more. Okay. With a break here, a break there, a guy doesn't do something. So you know how hard it is to win. Dustin Johnson is having an unbelievable year and maybe he had another couple of chances to win and he didn't. So my question about those greens and his putting stroke is, you know, and we've thought he's set up perfectly to win this thing a couple times. Obviously, got hurt that one year. Can he make enough 4 or 5 footers to win the Masters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think his putting is just fine.
Okay.
I think, you know, when you look at his stats, there's nothing that says he's struggling at all. He's probably the best driver of the ball on tour. That's again, splitting hairs. I mean, Justin Rose is a great driver of the golf ball, but not quite as long. Justin Thomas, McIlroy, they're all good drivers, and they're all very long. But DJ is the most gifted guy out there.
Right.
And his iron play is spectacular. Probably the numbers aren't quite like they were, but there's nothing holding him back. And I was talking to Butch Harmon here not long ago. He's just fun. You know, the last couple, 3 or 4 weeks, these players, they're looking forward to the Masters. So right. Their concentration might be somewhere else. It wasn't with me, because whenever I went on the golf course, I was thinking about that day or that week. But these guys know in the back of their mind the Masters around the corner. So everything they're doing is to peak next week. And I think Dustin Johnson is, you know, we talked about Rory, and, you know, he still seems to struggle a little bit with the putting. It's hard to be critical. But DJ is the guy. I think DJ and Justin Rose are very, very talented two young men.
Curtis, why for you, okay, for you and for someone who has been in this world a long time, I know why I've been lucky enough to cover the Masters at Augusta. I the first year I ever covered it, Dan Jenkins took me out on the course, and you know, Dan didn't like to spend
Speaking of, a whole lot of it. It was a sad day when we lost our buddy Dan.
Well, Jenkins. You know what, let's stop right there. Isn't that something? I mean, people...
Well, it's not a sad day. I like to celebrate. And he certainly was a life worth celebrating, wasn't he?
Oh, man. I said something to Sally Jenkins, who obviously is a great sports writer herself. She was supposed to give the eulogy, and then she fell ill the night before. But I had said something to her that she used in the eulogy, which was, it's the most improbable 90 years in the history of... Curtis, you know, I said, has there ever been a more wonderful and improbably wonderful 90-year run than the one Dan had?
You know, I didn't know him all that well because, again, he covered a lot of golf. But you know, I was so much younger, and he only covered the majors. And
right.
So, but I got to know him a little bit later, and I said a couple of things when he passed. They were asking me, I said, well, first of all, you have never made it to the bigs unless Dan Jenkins wrote about you, okay?
So true.
That's pretty much it. And if he wrote about you, you didn't sleep well that night because you never quite were sure how the article was going to come out. And he might use you and abuse you a little bit, but it was all in good fun. And he was just he was so talented. But you know what? To me, he was so talented because he looked at things differently. And that's what made him so good. I mean, our dear friend Rick Riley, they're different birds, but that makes them really talented and entertaining writers. And Dan was like that. The beauty of Dan Jenkins in his later years was not his writing ability. It was his tweeting ability.
Oh, my God. And I used to tell people all the time, if you're not just following him on Twitter during a major, you're missing one of the greatest shows on earth.
Well, that it. And when you get to be so old, he doesn't care if it's politically correct or not. That was the beauty of it.
Oh, man. He was.
Anyway, he was, you know, the sports world lost a great one. And there's many good ones out there, but he certainly was special.
Talking with the great Curtis Strange on the Mike Lubica podcast. More with Curtis in a minute. But first, this from Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and 15 minutes. That's all it takes. And in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. talking to Curtis Strange on the Mike Lupica podcast. We've been spending a lot of time on the Masters. So anyway, what I started to ask you was, why is the place so special if you come from that world and played it and had a chance to win and competed at the highest level there?
Wow. You know, it's everything about it. You know, you can talk about the history and tradition and Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts and the like, and all the great, great players that have come before us. The beauty of the Masters, one of the beauties, is when I was there young, you know, I got to practice and hit balls beside Sam Snead and Byron Nelson and Art Wall and Doug Ford and Claude Harmon 1 year, and the greats of the past. And that's the only place on the planet you could ever do that and talk to them and get to know them a little bit. And I cherished every moment with it. You know, Billy Casper, you know, my first round at Augusta when I was 19 years old was Jack Nicklaus. And anyway, I drove down in my yellow canary Chevy and came through the gates when I was 19 years old. And, you know, you come down Magnolia Lane. I came down Saturday afternoon before the tournament, and I never left the compound the whole week because you stayed in the crow's nest. You ate 3 squares a day there, and you got up the next morning and did it again. It's just a special place. And the golf course is unique. The clubhouse and the cottages are so understated. It's just beautiful. And what's there not to like? And then you think about the history of the game and those who came before you, and certainly Bobby Jones is a big part of that. I still get like that when I go through it here next Sunday night. I honestly do. It never disappoints.
Talking to Curtis Strange on the Mike Lubick podcast. And if you're a fan, the great thing about watching the Masters on Sunday afternoon is you feel like you know every blade of grass. You know where everybody has to be. You know where they want to be on the green. You know where they have to be on 13. You know where they have to be on 15.
Yeah.
I remember I was texting with Dan one time at the Masters when the year that Jordan Spieth kind of blew up, and he said at one point, just remember, there's an Atlantic Ocean of water between him and the green jacket. And boy, was there ever that day.
You know what? You felt like that. I'm telling you, they're small little creeks and one little pond, but you felt like there was an Atlantic Ocean, and you had to tiptoe around 11 and 12 and 13 and 15, and it was sometimes it was tough to do. When I first had a chance to win there, it was 1985. It was my really first stepping into the spotlight like that. And I had won some tournaments on tour, and I was a good amateur player, and I played on the Walker Cup team, and I thought I was a big friggin' deal. Well, when I turned the corner and had a 4-shot lead, I have never felt pressure like that in my life. And I'm being serious now. Because you know, I'm as honest as the day is long.
Yep,
and
yep.
The nervousness and the anticipation and this feeling out of body experience is unlike anything I'd ever felt before. And I didn't handle it very well. It was nerve wracking, and you know, I lost. But what that did, it gave me the opportunity to learn from that experience, and then you go on and you're better the next time. But that, you know, when you get nervous like that, and it's not nervous, it's anxious, it's thinking ahead of yourself, not controlling, okay, this shot. You hear us talk about it all the time, but it's the truth. If you let your mind wander about, you know, I'm going to be joining the likes of Bobby, you know, it's crazy.
Right.
And then the speed of the greens on top of that, it's, you don't handle it very well. But my point is, when it happens to you, or it happens to anybody playing there, that means it's a special place because it's so amped up. And you know as a player the place to hit it because you've watched it on TV, as you just said,
right,
over the years. So you know where to screw up and where not to screw up. And so that's also running in the back of your mind. But that's the beauty of for the fans, not only at the site, but especially on TV around the world, is that they know the course as well as I do, because they've watched it every Saturday and Sunday for many, many years. And it's a joy to watch because you know what you have to do, but can you do it? You know, some of those shots are so much more difficult than TV lets on. And I can't tell you how tough that second shot at 13 is off that side hill lie with that Rays Creek running around that green, you know, that Atlantic Ocean of Creek, you know.
Right.
It's a lot harder than you think it is. And then you put the magnitude of the tournament and the tradition and the history that you're going to create, if you can pull it off, you got to control a lot of different snakes in your head for a couple hours. You do.
Talking to my friend Curtis Strange, who would probably get the bends if he ever tried to offer a dishonest thought about golf when he's working on television. One other question, and then I'm going to ask you about your Cavaliers. Okay. Do you think Mickelson's got a chance?
You know, I was thinking that before you called. I'm looking at the favorites, the 10 or 15 to watch, and I'm kind of doing some starting my homework this morning. And yeah, I think so. He's playing pretty good. And he admits it just as well as anybody ever that he gets fired up when he comes through the gates down Magnolia Lane. It allows him to hit driver off the tee. He can freewheel it there. He's not confined off the tee. He's always been a damn good iron player, and his short game is still second to none on tour. So, yeah, I think he can. I mean, I really do. But I still think he has to drive it better than sometimes we've seen recently. But if he can drive it and take advantage of these par fives, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? More importantly, he believes it too.
I know.
And that's the most important. That's the only guy that has to believe it is him.
All right. Now, I'm speaking to a child of the state of Virginia here, okay? And I will say this because I was talking about this with Bob Ryan and Mitch Albom on our Sports Reporters podcast the other day, okay?
Yeah.
As great as Diakite's shot was, okay, to keep the Cavs alive, Kyhi Clark making that pass in that moment and not just dribbling the ball over half court and firing up a three was just one of the great pure basketball plays I've seen in the a no-look 50-foot pass. And obviously the kid had to make the shot, Curtis, but oh my God, that little guard making that play, and boy, you better have a little guard like him at this time of year.
You know, we talk about a lot of players, and they shoot a lot of threes in today's world, but you still need that guy, don't you?
Oh boy.
You still need that guy who can see the court and knows where everybody is at all times, and who, as we're talking about all the pressure, the backside of Augusta, who understands the pressure and doesn't let it get to him because he's running the show. And I marvel at these kids. These guys are kids. They can't even drink a beer. They can't even vote yet. And they're on this stage that the world is dying with them and cussing them when they don't make the shot or whatever. I just, you know, the kid for the other night that poured in all the threes against
Carson Edwards, yeah.
Oh my gosh! I mean, it's just I can't believe how good these kids are now. And this Final Four is a talented group of guys. And of course, I'm a UVA guy. I'm an ACC guy. My Wake Forest Demon Deacons didn't quite make it this year, so
no, they did.
But I'm a Virginia guy, and I was disappointed in them last year, and they've come back, and gosh, they got as good a chance as any. But they got two tough games ahead of them, and I'm rooting like hell for them. But they got a great, great coach, and I'm rooting for them. But it's, gosh, I just have a ball this weekend watching all this.
Oh,
it's,
man.
It's good stuff.
Curtis, people can watch you next week working for ESPN at Augusta. I will be, and you know, fortunately for you, I will be completely absorbed by this and critiquing your performance.
You know, if it wouldn't be the Mariners if I didn't hear my phone go off in my pocket when I'm on national television and look down and it's you. So please keep them coming. And, you know, I like constructive criticism, too, by the way.
Curtis Strange.
Don't text me about the color of my tie. Text me about my word usage, okay?
Curtis Strange, I appreciate your friendship. I know I appreciate you doing this for me from time to time. I honestly will be watching you next week, and I don't need any more of a rooting interest in the Final Four that know how much you want the Cavs to wear. So thank you so much for doing this today.
You got it. My pleasure.
The great Curtis Strange on the Mike Lubica podcast. Oh, my God. It's fun talking golf with him. We could have gone for another hour. Continue to download. Continue to subscribe. Watch him next week at the Masters. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday, everybody.
The Mike Lubica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.